Latu Latu. That is the pick for the Indianapolis Colts in round one, 15 overall. The UCLA defensive end. Good Friday morning to you. We'll try to keep this podcast quick and efficient. It is a busy day, and obviously more fireworks to be had tonight for the Colts. I am Kevin Bowen. He is Eddie Garrison. Eddie, good morning to you. Thank you for the time. Boy, kind of crazy. You know, 14 offensive picks. I know Chris Ballard expected a lot. I don't know if he thought 14 straight. I think there was some legit trade-up interest from the Colts. Roma Dunze-ish. I think Shane Steichen had some Brock Bowers interest. But they get, in their opinion, hell, they're calling him a top five player in the draft, period. And in their eyes, obviously the top defensive player in the draft class in Latu Latu. Eddie, any just kind of brief thoughts before we dive a little deeper into him and the pick?
I was that close. I was the only one that went edge rusher on our on the station prediction. If they went Dallas Turner, you would not be hearing the end of it.
That was your prediction there at 15 overall.
Yep. I wasn't buying the cornerback smoke.
You know, I think listeners of this podcast will know what I feel about edge rusher. I felt that it hasn't been as potent as it needs to be, hasn't been as juiced up as it needs to be. It's been a missing ingredient. I think of all the positions defensively in the NFL, that position on defense is the closest it could come to quarterback in terms of covering up other areas. And I think the Colts on paper, they have the potential to have a consistent pass rush that can cover up some of the questions I have in the secondary. With Latu, I assumed medicals would be the issue. And I think it's because of scar tissue with Montez Sweat, if I'm going to be totally honest with you. You know, that 2019 draft and the Colts trading out of round one, and Montez Sweat ended up being the pick for Washington. And look at his career. It's been really, really solid there. So that's why I kind of just was like, yeah, well, so much for that. But if you can put the medicals to the side, and we'll get into that, to me, this is one of the more impressive pass rushers from a production standpoint college football seen in quite some time. And I also think for the crowd out there, and I'm in this crowd, for the crowd out there that has wanted to see general manager Chris Ballard not be stubborn as hell and offer some tweaks and offer some adjustments to his roster building process and his draft philosophy, this pick is it.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the decathlon winner. This is not the guy they talked about endlessly at the combine because he tested 99% in all these categories. He's a pretty good athlete,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't have this crazy wingspan or anything like that. But what he has is something Kamoko Ture, Kwity Paye never sniffed, and that is rather crazy college production. So I guess let's just kind of start there, Eddie, before we get into the medicals. The numbers are, I think, rather obvious. 21.5 tackles for loss, led college football last season. 23.5 sacks the last 2 years. 129 pressures in 25 games. And then for our nerds out there, 26% pass rush rate. It's the most we've seen in college football in 3 years. Again, you have something that is different than Ture and Paye. And let's just go over these numbers. Eddie, Kamoko Ture at Rutgers, 58 career games, 14.5 sacks, 19 tackles for loss. Kwity Paye at Michigan, 59 career games, 11.5 sacks, 23.5 tackles for loss. So again, both guys, almost 60 games. Both guys right around a dozen sacks, right around 20 tackles for loss. And what was the common theme after both of those draft picks? Yeah, we got to develop.
Mm-hmm.
We got to mold them a little. It's a ball of clay, but we got to mold them.
Got all the traits.
Latu Latu, in 33 games, so about half the games of Ture and Paye, 24 sacks, nearly double their sack total, about double. And 35.5 tackles for loss.
Oh, yeah.
Again, nearly double, both of them. In half the game time.
Mm-hmm.
So this goes back to the Ballard answer on Friday. Bob Kravitz asked him a great question. How has your draft philosophy changed, if it has? And he has said, the unique traits we always want, but we got to have substance on tape. And he reluctantly, I felt like, gave that answer, but now the action is there with that sort of thing. So again, this is not some crazy elite length guy. It's pretty good speed, but nothing insane. It's a fine RAS score, but compared to normal Colts, it's not necessarily that. But to me, what I like about it is you're trying to address a clear issue in my eyes, an issue that I've probably beaten into the ground more than a lot of other people have wanted to. You know, I've gotten pushback of like, yeah, no, no, it's not as big of a need as you think it is. I would disagree. You need closers in this league. And I think we've seen it, Eddie. I mean, go back 2 years ago. Hurts, Heinicke, Davis Mills, all in your own building, all leading late drives, just ripping your heart out. Before the officiating got involved against Cleveland, P.J. Walker went 60 yards on you. And then go to the season finale. We talked so much about the first play of the game to Nico Collins. We talked so much about fourth and one to Tyler Goodson. But what about the game-winning Houston drive? Second and 20, they convert. Second and 14, they convert. Second and 13, they convert. Those are prime pass-rushing opportunities, and you couldn't close. You closed against Tampa. Remember the Tampa game? Remember Samson Ebicom?
Yeah.
Against Tristan Wirfs? Those types of plays have been way too few and far between. So this is a bit win now. The 15th overall pick has not had a lot of instant impact in recent years. You have to have that here. And I think there's an ability to have that, given Latu's polishness, really, as a rusher. The first thing he said, I go, how would you describe yourself as a rusher? He goes, I got three moves. You know, oftentimes you hear about pass rushers, they come into the NFL with one, and then you got to develop other pitches. He's adamant he's got multiple pitches ready to use. Again, expectations need to be high because you need early results when you have the medical resume he does.
How high are we talking here?
I think you need... sack numbers can be a little skewy. I know it's an easy number to all the historical data is there, so we always go to that number. I think double-digit sacks should be an expectation.
As a rookie?
I do. But more than that, I want the consistent timely pressure. And I want the consistent timely moments. I do. And that involves a little bit more gray area in it, you know? But I want an element of a closer and a guy coming out of the eighth and the ninth inning stepping up for you.
Yep.
I mean, look at the quarterbacks in the schedule this year. Stroud twice, Lawrence twice, Allen, Tua, Jordan Love. I mean, hell, Caleb Williams, Aaron Rodgers. You know, it's last year, 10 of 17, backup or rookie QBs. So I feel like from that aspect to it, that box really checks. If you're going to be a simple defense, which is kind of what they are, and you want to have as many bodies on the back end to help out the young and experienced secondary, you need individual dudes that can just go win. And he has that.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, they played seven ranked opponents in his 2 years at UCLA. He had at least a half a sack in all seven of those games. So again, his production was not just feasting on the bottom feeders. He definitely had some big sack games against bottom feeders, but still, you know, he had... you know, a sack, a half sack, multiple sacks against, you know, all of those ranked teams that they played. And, you know, part of the reason why I've kind of driven home this point of pass rush, Eddie, is, you know, you benched Quiddy Pay late in the year. Your pass rush package, IndyCar package, how we like to call it, DeForest Buckner, Dayo Odengbo, and Samson Ebicom. Those are your three constants. And Tyquan Lewis took over for Quiddy Pay late in the year. Well, when that happens, Tyquan's a nice rusher. But, Eddie, it's not enough fastballs. It's not enough Paul Skenes. Not enough Aroldis Chapmans. It's a lot more of the powery, you know, twists and stunts our way to the quarterback and not just the individual dudes. And, again, Latu showed in college he's got some individual nature to him that can really, really help out. It seems like people are really high on just his technician as a pass rusher. Reads it. I love the rugby background. There's ample rugby background. He actually thought about pursuing a rugby career when Washington didn't medically clear him. I guess I'm ready to get into the medicals, but is there anything else I'm missing that you wanted to get to, just maybe more of him as a player? Did have a couple interceptions for what it's worth.
Not too much, really. Okay. I think you've hit it all pretty on the head. I was watching the NFL Network coverage, and I was over at a friend's house, and they go to Ian Rappaport, and he's like, he starts talking about Latu. I'm like, wait, what? I was like, I thought they had this love for Dallas Turner because that was everything that had been
that's
speculated.
Well, and that's pre-Ballard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that is, he's the 4-4, he's the bendy, he's the length, and, you know, nice college production, but nothing crazy from right. Dallas Turner. So, again, this is where you see some involvement in him from a drafting standpoint. Now, the medicals are the biggest question, and I couldn't be less educated about them. And I say this to you all the time about injuries, Eddie. I hate discussing them because I lack confidence.
Yeah.
Lord knows I did not go to school to study anything from a medical standpoint. You know, Adam Schefter's reporting a handful of teams had him red flagged. Okay, if a handful had him red flagged, does that mean 27 of them didn't?
Rappaport said the same thing. He said a couple teams had him off their board completely, but he said there were multiple teams out there that had him passing with flying colors when he went through a physical.
You know, you just go off of he played every game at UCLA.
The last two years.
You know, longevity of his career. I kind of fumbled through it, but eventually asked Ballard that question to end it. You know, Leighton Vander Esch was a name thrown out there by, I think, Albert Breer. So Vander Esch was drafted, same draft as Shaq, 2018. And now, obviously, his career has come to a close. You look at Gethers, it was about a five-year career. I think it's a fair nitpick to have when you're drafting 15 overall. But I do want to make sure, I don't think this is some three-down, 10 to 12-year guy. And I think in an ideal world at 15, you would get that. That would be the hope and the goal. But if you're not going to get that, you better get high-end pass rush ability, closing ability, all of that. And I do think you can get there. You know, does he get to a second contract? Does he? I mean, he turns 24 on New Year's Eve. You know, I think those are all things that you point to. But I don't think you need to or will ask from him to be a 70-85% snap guy right away. Or maybe even ever. But I just think pass rush means so much that if he brings you that element, it can offset him being out there for, you know, 80-90% of the snaps. We had a great caller today call into our morning show. And, you know, in comparison to Gethers and Vander Esch, he kind of brought up the natural impact force, if you will, that is more there when linebackers and safeties are making hits. And, you know, there's just more wear and tear. You know, there's more run-up and just in general how gravity works and science works.
Probably more force, too.
Yeah, force. I mean, those hits are going to be more impactful. You know, theoretically, Latu would not have that. It's the same doctor that did Peyton's neck surgery. I think that's probably where the comparisons can stop. I know Peyton came back and had a very nice couple of years, but let's not act like standing in the pocket playing quarterback is is the same as coming off the edge and rushing the passer. So this is the great unknown, and this is the confusing aspect to it. This is the I think this is where the real pushback is. I don't think there's a whole lot there, like as a player. Again, maybe, you know, he's not necessarily a three-down guy, unquestionably. I think you could probably push a little bit there. But basically what happened is right before the start of the 2020 season, he got hurt in practice. And that was a COVID year. Remember, the Pac-12 was kind of weird about how all of that unfolded. And, you know, he ended up getting something done and went back to Washington. They're like, yeah, you know, Jimmy Lake was their new coach. He's like, yeah, we can't clear you. Stayed on actually as a student assistant and kind of thought, you know, the game of football had whatever passed him by. And that's where that professional rugby career, he thought of super, super multi-sport athlete growing up. He was actually in the same recruiting class at Washington as Puka Nacua, ironically enough. Clearly neither of them ended their careers there. But then eventually got the itch again, ended up getting clearance, and his position coach moved on from Washington to UCLA. That was where the UCLA connection became there, and the position coach told Chip Kelly we should make a run at this guy in the portal, and he did spring practice, I think, in 22, no contact, and then got full clearance that summer, And then again, each of the last 2 years at UCLA played every single game. So that's where I stutter. That's where I pause. That's where I don't have a great answer. The medical element is the confusing part of all of this. But if you are able to get UCLA Latu for 6 to 7 years, I think it's a win. Again, in an ideal world, the first round pick would be the 10 to 12 year, the mainstay, the three down guy. I'm not sure if Latu, I want to be realistic with it. I'm not sure if you can bet on that. But if you can get important fourth quarter timely pressure from him for a half a dozen years at least, I think it's a very acceptable move. And part of me probably just wants to be realistic from what the careers of Ben Banigou and Kamoko Touré and, you know, even Kwity Paye to a degree have looked like for you. So, yeah, that's where I'm at medically. Again, I couldn't stop thinking of Montez Sweat. And I know that was a heart condition, but got it. Ballard's got to have a little PTSD about that.
Didn't they select a couple players that are coming off torn Achilles? Or, well, it was Dio with the torn Achilles.
Yeah, Dio. Blackman was a torn ACL. Yep. Yeah, I just think necks are different, man.
I totally agree.
And the full-out retirement.
Yeah.
You know, the full-out. And if you look at Jimmy Lake's comments from back in 2021, he's like, we contacted multiple specialists. We talked to NFL teams that have had similar injuries. You know, Washington is very close to the Seahawks, just from a facility standpoint. So I don't want to act like, I mean, that's a big deal. And, you know, Latu last night, when asked about it, he kind of brought up COVID and acted like maybe they didn't do their full due diligence. Who knows? And also, I want to sneak this in there. I think he was just confused when asked about the Colts' contact with him. I was talking to one of the Colts scouts, and he's like, we talked to that dude a lot. I think he thought the question was, did he have a top 30 visit with the Colts? That did not happen, but they talked a lot to at the combine, and again, a lot of he's a monster was the quote that I heard from the Colts scout, but a lot of contact with obviously him at UCLA, and I assume some Senior Bowl interaction with him as well. But and I don't know, people made such a big deal when I tweeted that out last night, and I guess it's just one of those things where I would venture to say, Eddie, like, of the 10 picks the Colts make in an average draft, I would say 3 to 4 have very minimal contact with the Colts. They feel good about them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to waste time. They don't want to show their hand. So they just quietly go about their business.
Mm-hmm.
And if you feel good about it, I mean, and you trust your area scouts to do your homework, then you're good. And maybe a 10-minute interaction is really all you need. And obviously you do behind-the-scenes stuff. And,
yeah,
you know, Chris Ballard made it clear him and Chip Kelly have a pretty good relationship and all that. But that was not too unusual at all.
How about him trying to say Indianapolis, though? Did you see that?
No, did he butcher?
Yes.
Well, I think we're going to butcher his first name. Based off the phonetic, Lay-Atu-Latu. Lay, L-A-Y. I think Goodell went lie.
He went Lay-Atu.
I see Lay. I mean, Colts bio says Lay, so I'll go with that. The Zoom was a little chaotic. I should have just directly asked him pronunciation-wise. You know, trade up Eddie again. Adunze, if I'm going to go with a name. Clearly, look at the top 14. One trade. Mm-hmm. That was 10 to 11. I mean, that was it. That was just the swap to get J.J. McCarthy for the Vikings there. So you saw little movement. You know, I've asked Ballard that question, I think pretty annually. Do you think about trading up? Do you think about trading back? You know, one way or the other. And I'd never recall an answer like that.
I don't either.
And I do think there was some legit interest. Again, I feel like Shane Steichen had some legit interest in Bowers. Boy, the Raiders taking Bowers just was so head-scratching to me after Michael Mayer.
Is that why I was head-scratching to you?
Well, it's just like, I mean, how many times in the history of the NFL, Eddie, have you seen a tight end go round 2 1 year and round 1 the next year to the same team? I mean, there's no way that it's happened very often. So,
I mean, New England did draft Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski together, so.
Sure, yeah, well, that's probably where we should stop
yeah.
on that end. Anything else stand out to you? Just draft-wise? I mean, certainly Brian Thomas of the Jags is interesting for Colts fans. I know that was a popular name at 15. They traded back, right?
Yes.
And still got Brian Thomas there.
Michael Penix going 8 overall, and then the general manager saying that he could sit 4 to 5 years. Like, dude's going to be 29 years old by the time you're talking about starting him.
Well, and then go back to the Penix one. Wouldn't that have been the exact spot the Colts are trading up? Get above Chicago to take Adunze?
That'd be my guess, yeah.
Isn't that the thought?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have a great relationship with Raheem Morris. I mean, in my opinion, he was probably the runner-up to Shane Steichen. Like, and Ballard said last night, you know, he compared it to when they traded back from 3 to 6. You're trading back to 15, I think, is what paused some people. Going all the way back to 15.
Yep.
You know, that's too far back for their liking. So it's just the reminder of it is a two-way street, and it takes two to tango. And I say that quite often about free agency, but it's a good reminder in the draft as well. Oh, yeah, trade up for Marvin Harrison Jr. Well, you don't think Arizona thinks that could help out Kyler Murray? Like, you know, it just it's not that easy. So,
especially when you look at that wide receiver room, yikes.
Right, exactly. Oh, no, that's could not agree more.
I thought the second biggest storyline last night was Buffalo trading back with Kansas City, and then Kansas City.
Oh my gosh!
Select Xavier Worthy.
Like, is that just like, so what are Kansas you doing? City? That is just so Kansas City.
Oh, I was gonna say that's so Buffalo, but yeah.
Well, both of that. Yeah, yeah. I'll be curious to see how the wideouts peel off the board. Let's get into our day two thoughts on the tail end of Twitter questions. Unless you got anything else, let's get into the Twitter questions.
My Twitter question is: what year is that Masters hat from?
It's a throwback. My neighbor was there and this year and got it for me, and I love it. What do you think? It's got like a. It looks like something a caddy would have worn in like 1971.
I agree. Very solid.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
A nice little cream. Is that what color to go with on the top?
And then
got a green bill, the green button on the top. And
yellow's almost goldish.
Yeah. Yellow around the for the Masters or the United States. Oh, yeah. That's solid.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
just a few Twitter questions today, starting with Tanner. I think this means Chris Ballard regrets passing on Montez Sweat. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point to bring up. You know, if you look at Sweat's career, he's been just really, really consistent. I mean, nothing crazy eye-popping, but really solid and very, very reliable. And again, it's that mix of traits and production, Eddie. That's what it goes back to. You know, if you're going to rank percentages, okay, let's call Dallas Turner a 99% athlete. Let's call his college production 70%. You take those two numbers, the flip of it to me is Latu. He's like the 70% athlete, but the 99% college production. That's the mix there. But yeah, Tanner, I think that's a good point. I think there's some general regret. Again, you've been chasing elite pass rush. I mean, who's the best edge rusher this franchise has drafted since Mathis? We're still recording the podcast, by the way. We're just literally dumbfounded with an answer.
Mm-hmm.
It might be Kwity Paye.
Dio? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Edge. Like, I consider Dio and Taekwon more inside and versatile, but, like, obviously the Jerry Hughes experiment did not work out. You know, clearly Bjorn Werner was a bust. And then from there, whether it was Basham or Ture or Bandigu or now Paye, you're just kind of left wanting more. It's rather, you know, I saw some people bring up Bjorn Werner last night. I want to make this very clear. First off, Latu had more production than Bjorn, even though Bjorn was ACC Defensive Player of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
The testing numbers are totally dwarfed. If you want to call Latu a 70% athlete, call Werner like a 25% athlete. Honestly, when you go back and look at those testing numbers, it is kind of wild. But you go back and, you know, when I read off those Ture and Paye college numbers, I'm just reminded of it. I remember saying to Ballard, I'm like, did Michigan not utilize him right,
mm-hmm.
in your opinion? He's like, no. I thought they utilized him fine. And I'm like, wow. 11 sacks in 59 games? I mean, that is a small, small number. Yeah. So, this is obviously much different than that.
Drew would like to know why he should be excited for Latu. Everyone expected Dallas Turner to be gone and potentially inside the top 10. There he was, unanimously agreed upon to be the best edge rusher, and the Colts picked the guy that medically retired in the middle of his college career.
I do want to correct. I was looking at a different number for Pay. For Pay, it was 28 career games. So again, still when you compare that to Latu, Latu had what, 30, what did I say, 33 games for him?
33 games, yes. Yeah.
So you're looking at a rather similar game total. You know, obviously Latu's had a few more. 11.5 sacks to 24 sacks. You know, that obviously is a big, big difference from what you had there. Why should you be excited about Latu?
That is correct.
Well, again, I think it is the analytical college numbers indicate to you that this is one of the best rushers we've seen in college football in quite some time. I mean, all of it. All of the deep, deep numbers are, you know, indicate that. Even if you don't want to say, hey, tackles for loss, you know, the most in college football from last season. Yeah, I mean, consensus, first team All-American, all of that. The variety of pass rush moves, I think that's something that's worth repeating. I think you have pass rushers that just, they enter the NFL and it's more of a one-trick pony. I don't think that's there really when you look at what you have with him. This looks like a guy that can come in and give you multiple pass rush moves pretty early on. Obviously got to fine tune and refine and all that, but it seems like that is there.
And he's going to get a lot of one-on-one opportunities too.
Correct. I think that is a good point. They just felt like, you know, there's been too many times this year where, like, you know, I remember that Cleveland game when you're facing DeJuan Jones, a fourth-round tackle, I think making his one of his first NFL starts. He just couldn't take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. Like, there's been games where I feel like the Blake Freelands of the world have been playing for other teams and you haven't exposed them enough.
Yeah.
You know, now I think you got a guy one-on-one that could do that.
And who knows? Maybe he's having a really good game where he's impacting, next thing you know, DeForest Buckner. Gets those one-on-one looks.
And again, I want to stress this. I don't think you need to play him a ton of snaps. So I don't think you should be running him into the ground per se. I think you've got a lot there that can help you out. Now, again, the only question for me is just medical and I guess a little bit of age. And age, you know, Ballard kind of laughed that off last night. He's like, I went after a 29-year-old rusher in free agency in Danielle Hunter. Like, if you can get, and I know it's not ideal, but to me, if you can get the 6 to 8 year closer off the edge, I just think it's such a desperate need that's been lacking. I think you can live with that.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be perfect, but I think you can live with that.
Two questions left. Evans, this is a raw reaction, Kevin, from the Latu pick. So take it for, and remember that as I phrase this up to you.
Got it.
I know Chris Ballard loves his defensive lineman. But how do we pass up a cornerback and even wide receiver, as Ballard himself even said we need to get some weapons for Anthony Richardson? Not only do we immediately need edge rush, but we draft a guy with serious medical issues. Latu was told he may need to medically retire, and I don't think he was someone with a bigger medical risk than Michael Penix Jr. But here we are, just frustrating with players like Brian Thomas and Quinyon Mitchell still on the board. I'm trying to remain optimistic. At that point, I would have been more happy trading back than picking Latu there.
We love raw reactions. So thank you, Evan.
Yes.
For this. Eddie Garrison, yesterday at 12:03 p.m., I tweeted this out. My ideal Colts draft goals. 1, future Pro Bowl defender at premium position, defensive end or corner. 1A, pass-catching weapon growing into Anthony Richardson's second contract. Then I dropped to 3, a future O-line starter from a mid-round pick. And 4, quality depth found at running back and linebacker. Those are my goals for the Colts in this draft. I think the only way to try and achieve the first two is to go defender first, wideout second.
Yes.
I think if you went wide out first, you wouldn't be able to get that second. And this just comes back to the gas station analogy that I've said to you numerous times, Eddie. You're tasked with walking into a gas station, you got to get a Reese's and you got to get a peanut butter M&M's. You're allowed to walk into the gas station twice in an hour, but only can do it 2 times. You walk in there the first time, there's 2 Reese's and there's 8 peanut butter M&M's. You're probably going to take the Reese's, right?
100%.
Simple math would say that. Not to mention it's probably better.
Yes, 100%.
The Reese's is the pass rusher. The peanut butter M&M's is the wideout. There's just, look at the wideouts that got paid last night, Eddie.
Yeah.
Where was A.J. Brown drafted?
He was second round, right?
Where was Amaron St. Brown drafted?
Fourth round, right?
Sounds right. Terry McLaurin, DK Metcalf, Deebo Samuel, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like, that position has just proven. Now, again, I know that there is reliance on depth, and it's a little bit scary, and I fully understand the Richardson support and all of that. You know, I'm a huge advocate for that. But if you're trying to do both, I think if you're going to swing for the fences a little bit in the draft, which, again, they just don't do a lot in free agency, I think this is the mode of operation that makes some sense to me. Now, we'll see how the second round works out. And, you know, when we come back on Monday morning, Eddie, I will have some pushback if the Friday picks are not pass catcher and DB. I would wait a little bit. I'm a little nervous thinking they're going to go O-line or linebacker in one of those there. So I'm just – this reaction from Evan, and maybe it was the raw moment. Hell, maybe when the Colts are drafting at 10 p.m., some of the drinks are starting to flow a little bit. It seemed like there was a lot of this pick effing sucks.
Yep.
And I was just like, damn, is that really the tone?
Ballard was in a very lose-lose situation to me last night, no matter what he did besides trading up. Because then if you're trading back, it's like, oh, look, Chris Ballard's doing it again. He's trading back.
Yeah.
You draft defensive line. Oh, it's not a wide receiver or corner. You draft corner. Oh, it's not a wide receiver or an edge rusher. Like, so I felt like Ballard was not in a position to win last night other than just flat-out trading up and getting Odunze or Marvin Harrison Jr.
And look, call me out. Say I carry Chris Ballard's water, say whatever. I think listeners of the podcast will know I do not fall into that camp. I think I've been, hopefully, pretty open with my evaluations on Chris Ballard and think I've done it in an acceptable manner, even though some might push back on that. But everybody, I think, just wants it to be black and white with him.
Yep.
You love it or you hate it. And it's like, can we not just evaluate each individual move for what it's worth? And as I've laid out throughout this podcast, there is a change here in philosophy. Some might not see it, but I'm trying to kind of get us into the book and explain where the change is. And, you know, I've said this many times about pass rusher. Don't stop swinging. Don't stop swinging.
That was one of the first things I remember you saying when we started having our draft-centric pods. It's like, I wouldn't rule that out because you always have to try.
Just because you've missed doesn't mean you keep the bat on your shoulders or you stop swinging. The position means way too much.
Yes.
To stop doing that. But, and I feel like I'm looking down at my dad in the third base coach's box as I'm sitting there 0-2 right now, but I look down at him and he's like, you know, swing up, Kevin. You know, I've swung down at the first two pitches, you know, something along those lines. Okay. But you still got to swing, but you swing differently in this mode. And that's exactly what this pick is to me. Again, medical questions, certainly there. I think people were jarred a bit, like he wasn't there in mock drafts. So that was a little foreign to some people. Again, I just assume the medicals. And the medical is the hardest thing because some teams did red flag him, but obviously the majority of the NFL did not. So I appreciate the candor, Evan.
Yesterday, Kevin, I had like a shift from that would be Bowers or Mitchell to Edge. Because I just kind of like took a step back and I thought about this from like the Ballard perspective here. The reason why I started to believe like the cornerback was all smoke is like last week he admitted the love that he has for the current group of cornerbacks that he has and feels like they've grown up and whatnot. So to me, when you look at it from the standpoint of starting position and playing time, you look and you already saw the struggles last season with all those cornerbacks being inexperienced. You throw in another potential rookie cornerback and you already have, you would expect Juju Brents to start, but you expect Jalen Jones and Dallas Flowers to be competing for that other outside corner spot. So you're telling me that if you selected a cornerback with your 15th overall pick and he's not out there starting day one, he's not getting enough reps in his rookie season, that he's going to be able to learn enough the NFL game?
Right.
To me, that was the reason why I didn't think they would go that way. And plus, it just seemed like there's been a little bit of writing on the wall with Quiddy Pay. You have the Danielle Hunter, and then you had all the reported interest in Dallas Turner locally. To me, that was just like, you know what? I think we need to look a little bit more here. And plus, with 15, you're trying to draft somebody who's an impactful player, and you're trying to replenish some of that top half of the roster talent. And I just felt like, with the way the draft was shaping up with so many offensive players that were so high, that Ballard is going to get one of the top defensive choices. And I just felt like in that moment, he would prefer to go edge over cornerback.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well said. I think if you listen to the Ballard answer from Friday's podcast, I didn't get the vibe, again, that this was going to be some Eric Fisher draft selection of like, we're going to look for tackles in the draft. If we don't find one, we'll sign Eric Fisher. Like, right. I don't get that feeling about DB, corner, or safety. And we'll see how the next couple of weeks play out. My thought was at 15 is if you feel like there is a corner, though, that is the shadow guy, is the true dominant number one, that would have been enticing to me. But again, I've always been more team rush over team cover. If I could pick one of the two, I'd rather have the rush than have the cover. Ideally, you'd have both, but that's me. Do we have any more, or should we wrap it?
We have one Twitter question left from Pumpkin Pastry. To date, this entire roster still very much looks like a lot like Chris Ballard's roster-building formula. Do you expect this draft to yield anything that signals a nod to a Shane Steichen demand or want?
Yeah, it's a great question. Obviously, we'll have to see how the rest of the draft plays out. But again, I had heard there was some legit Brock Bowers interest from Shane. You know, if you look at Dallas Goedert in Philly, Eddie, I mean, he was rather incredible those couple years with Shane. You know, huge yards per target number. Very impressive. So I do think that's kind of a... That one was curious. When I saw Bowers start to fall, and I thought to myself, man, are we going to see the Steichen influence? And I also found it interesting that Ballard several times last night, when asked specifically about why Latu was labeled as a top five player in the draft by the Colts, why he was the pick here at 15, he frequently mentioned the position he plays. He's a rusher. He said that on several occasions. That's positional value. And I've been clamoring for that. Now, again, some would say Bowers is just a weapon. You know, it's unfair to label him a tight end. But if you want to call him a tight end, unquestionably, pass rusher means more than weapon. It means more than tight end. So I thought that was just interesting from Ballard of, yes, we know what he thinks about the trenches, but specifically that rusher aspect of it, he really drove that home.
Plus, you're sitting there. What Raiders had, what pick was that?
13, yeah.
And it's like, do I trade up two spots, lose capital to select a tight end? Or I know that, you know, Vegas may not go with Dallas Turner or Latu, so going to get one or the other. And then if we wanted Quinyon Mitchell or Terry and Arnold, they would both be there. So to me, I felt like Ballard probably just sat there and was like, you know what? The risk of me losing an extra pick does not offset the talent that is still there on the board.
Curious to see in these future picks the rest of the draft, do we see more of that college production outweigh the super RAS score? A marrying of the two is probably ideal, but I am interested in that. Again, Malachi Corley, that's a name that I keep on coming back to, Eddie, and that's a me preference.
Yak King, right? Is that what they call him?
The Yak King. A little Debo Samuel vibe there. Again, didn't light up and didn't really test much, but I don't think he'd light up a RAS score. But just a damn good football player when you watch him, particularly in the open field. So we'll see wideout. We'll see DB. Again, I think very close to that would be O-line, linebacker, running back, kind of right around there as well.
Briefly here to conclude the podcast, 49ers reportedly taking calls on Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk.
Saw that.
Your thoughts, if the Colts should have interest, and if so, what would you give up for either one of those players?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'd probably wait to see what happens here at 46.
Because they selected Ricky Pearsall, and to me, when they select Pearsall, that's more Ayuk than it is Debo.
I mean, would it take a first-rounder?
Well, I mean, Tyreek went for a first. Devontae Adams didn't go for a first. A.J. Brown didn't go for a first. Diggs didn't go for a first either time.
Yeah, but ages are different with some of those guys.
Plus, you would have to pay Ayuk.
Yeah, you just absorb more of Debo.
Debo has 2 years left on his contract.
Yeah. I would seriously look into it, but, you know, I also kind of want to see how the board falls tonight. You know, probably right around that first or second round pick is what you would give up. But, you know, I think there's a little bit of this of, like, I know you are catering to the player with this comment, but you do have to send a message to your quarterback of like, hey, man, we're going to give you help. You know, you imagine C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson's text conversations right now as buddies. CJ Stroud. Damn, dude. You guys are really doing a lot to help you out. I mean, seriously, you know? Like, and that's why I guess if you want to go a little Pacers on you. You know, I wasn't, you know, I think if I did the 1 to 10 scale of Pascal Siakam, I was like a 5 or a 6 on the trade. Wasn't like a 9 or a 10. But one of the reasons why I did like the trade is because I thought it sent a clear message to Tyrese Halliburton of we're serious. In the NBA, it means even more. You need to make sure your star knows that, especially in small markets. Well, I think there's a little bit of that in the NFL, especially with quarterback. So I don't think it's the end of the world, but I think it's something to keep in mind when you discuss some of these moves. All right, anything else, man?
I don't think so. Quickly, your expectations or needs or wants for day two?
Wideout DB, yak preferably.
What about a offensive lineman?
Yeah, save it for round four. Bordellini, right? Wisconsin? That's who I went with in my mock.
Think so. There.
Future mid-round draft selection there. All right, Eddie Garrison, have a great weekend, man.
Thanks, you too. Go Pacers.
Go Pacers, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.